Welcome to the C-Suite podcast that we're recording at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. I'm Russell Goldsmith, and together with Graham Barrett, we'll be chatting to a number of the speakers and attendees from the conference.
We're producing the show in partnership with Remote, the global HR platform, and we'll be recording the conversations on their booth here in the Creative Industries Expo. Really hope you enjoy this episode. I'm here now with Ian Beecroft. He is the CEO of Signal and Cypher. Ian, nice to see you.
Graham, good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to see you. Now, you've given a talk today here at South by Southwest called Billion Dollar Teams, the Future of an AI-Powered Workforce. Tell me more about that. Sounds fascinating.
Absolutely. So our thesis is that the idea of work is obviously changing radically, but most people are looking at it from the element of replacing labor. Most companies are saying this is a great way to get efficiencies. I can replace full-time employees with automation, with AI, grab those efficiencies and get rewarded by the stock market. We're seeing that a lot play out with tech companies right now. But we believe that that's kind of a race to the bottom. You know, you can only cut your way so much, and eventually if everybody does that, you're all cutting your way to the bottom, and then it's the bloodbath trying to figure out like who's got the edge. So we're always trying to focus on what are the new AI native workflows. With every single technological revolution, you move towards some sort of native application of that technology. Mm-hmm. Now, we tend to move to those new paradigms with the frameworks of the past in mind. You know, Marshall McLuhan says every media imitates the previous media before it. Rashad Tabakala says the future's not fit the containers of the past. Like, those things ring true for us.
Okay.
So we're always figuring out, okay, if this is so radically new, we don't want to be doing what we've been doing in the past with it, just kind of lift and shift and say we're being more efficient. What is something you can do with this technology that you fundamentally could not, that gives you an unfair advantage in the marketplace? And for us, we look at re-engineering workflows from the ground up and then putting AI behind it, not the reverse. Most people are coming at it with, how can I put AI on this?
Yeah.
And just like, it's like putting a Ferrari engine on a bike. Like,
yeah.
It's not even gonna turn on. It doesn't work with the same machine. And you know, maybe you can put it in a Buick and it'll go faster, yeah. But it's not meant for that.
Mm.
And we've done several projects with amazing companies where we'll take something like the brainstorm or the design sprint, some sort of critical business process.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go back and say, from first principles, if we could burn this all down, start fresh today, and start from ground zero, what would the perfect version of this look like?
Okay.
We'll do the research, we'll figure out why the existing one doesn't work, and then we'll build it from scratch with an eye towards how does AI enhance every single one of these steps. And what we found is, unlike the 20 to 40% efficiencies you get if you're good with the tools, we're getting 100 to 1000x efficiencies with very specific tasks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that is a game changer, yeah. And how close are we? I mean, I think everyone in the world of work has had some kind of contact with AI. How close are we to it being completely pervasive, say?
Oh, wow. That's a hard thing to guess, but it's diffusing through society faster than anything I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I mean, that tracks, because every single revolution builds on the revolution of the past, and we now have the infrastructure and the piping for ideas and technology to spread quickly. But I mean, within years, we could have 60, 70% of the population using this on a regular basis, which is wild to think about. Just think about how long that took for mobile to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And that happened fast.
Mm.
So yeah, it's years, not decades.
Yeah, yeah. And so what impact is this going to have on our teams, on our culture, on our workplaces?
Yeah, so it all depends on how you approach it.
Mm.
Again, getting back to like, are you efficiency-minded? Are you trying just to go for the quick win? Or are you looking at this as an opportunity to fundamentally start anew?
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are willing to do that work, to figure out, okay, what's working, what's not, how do I re-engineer this? Those are the ones that are going to absolutely transform their teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to find some things that don't feel natural within that. So for example, we actually treat bots as colleagues and AIs as colleagues. So we're working in our communications channels. We get prompted by our bots sometimes. And then we have bots handing things back and forth between each other.
The shoulder.
Yeah. Very much. And then they're passing things to each other as if they are colleagues as well. And this multi-agent agentic formula is really where I see the future of AI going. And being able to have bots that spin up other bots. So the real change here is we're used to being humans doing the work. The units that get you to a complete product is a process that you own.
Mm.
And a lot of people look at automation as taking away from that agency, from that power that you have to do the work. Whereas with AI, the real skill set is going to be delegation and orchestration. It's, can you take the resources at your disposal, find a way to maximize what you have with those bots, with that AI, to do it faster at more scale, rather than you doing it yourself?
Okay. So it's all about, so that's the kind of productivity side of it. That's where you see one of the win-wins here.
Absolutely. Yeah, the productivity is huge. Creativity is another one.
Okay.
Because you have net new skill sets. Like, we all have the ability to express ourselves visually in ways we couldn't before. I am not artistically inclined, but I can make amazing things with video and with imagery with so many of those tools.
Yeah.
And that, what AI does so brilliantly is it abstracts the years of practice, discipline, and exposure needed to perform proficiently in so many different disciplines. Now, that's scary to the people who've spent the time doing that work.
Yep.
But what happens is this is going to happen to every single discipline in every single domain. So we're all going to be a quote-unquote victim to that in some way, shape, or form. As scary as that is, it levels the playing field. Because right now it's happening to artists, which, as an artist, I would be very, very frightened of what's happening. You know, your voice can be cloned. Your style can be cloned. The incentive to develop a style right now is almost non-existent because I can clone it and rip it from you before you even get popular with it. So why would I do that? But efficiencies, the work that you do almost in any domain, project management, there's nothing that's immune from this. But at the same time, it gives people as an individual the ability to basically have these armies of skill sets and bots that can work on your behalf. So I think we're going to see a massive rise in solopreneurs and small teams that can have massive effect.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. Well, I'll go with creativity. Is it going to, you know, be the sole creator, if you like, AI, or is it going to be used to augment, enhance human creativity?
Yeah. So it's going to do both.
Yeah.
You know, we always find that when something new like this happens, there's always that like sugar rush of people saying, I'm gonna do the easiest, fastest thing that I'm gonna scale. And you see the YouTube videos, make $25 million overnight with no effort necessary. And like, okay, cool, that's gonna get a million views. Yeah. Nobody's gonna care. And then people really figure out novel and interesting and effective ways of using these technologies. I think you're gonna see both. And as a result of just using it, you're going to see mediocrity go through the roof. As much as I believe in the technology, I think we're also going to be inundated with absolute crap for a while. And then we'll get to the other side eventually.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's finish up talking about, keep with the topic of AI, but let's talk about finding talent, recruitment. What kind of role do you think AI could play in that?
Huge.
Yeah.
So everything from helping source your partners, your colleagues, and your candidates through doing the interview process. We're actually experimenting with cloning our staff in a way that you could actually have it and like do the interview with one of our bots. Now, we're not going to only do that.
Yeah.
We would experiment with that and kind of see where that goes. But at the same time, if I can get to a point where you're talking to an avatar of me that's actually going to respond in a very realistic way, like me, that has all my documentation, everything I've ever written regarding my position, my role, and what we do, and everything that knows about the job description, what we're hiring for, you could have a really interesting conversation and then be informed of it later.
Wow.
And so it can do things like triage, it can help source, it can filter. You can also do like onboarding with AI, which is amazing for that. Everything from having a knowledge base that you're trained on to delivering that. There's no form, I think HR in particular is going to be one of the most fundamentally transformed functions in business by AI.
Yeah. And that is an excellent soundbite to finish on. So Ian Beecroft, thank you for joining me today.
It's a pleasure, Graham. Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm joined by Khalil Vinson, the founder of TechFest Live. Now, Khalil and I, we met at a barbecue last night, which was very kindly hosted by our partners here at Remote. We got chatting, and I said, I need to get you on the podcast. Yeah. Now, that's because you were telling me about all about TechFest Live. So, yeah, tell us the story.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. So, TechFest Live, we're a nonprofit ed tech organization. One of the pillars to our program is hosting an annual technology expo for underrepresented middle school and high school students. I started this back in 2019 after I graduated from Texas State University, and my goal was we really need to get more underrepresented youth involved in technology, not just from a coding and engineering standpoint, but we really look at all verticals, right? Agriculture, aviation, aerospace, energy, healthcare, sports and gaming. And so we bring in partners, players, speakers, workshops to talk to students about what does it mean to be in technology? What does that specific vertical really look like, and what's happening down the pipeline for it?
Now, you're here, there's a Korean, it's the Korea Pavilion, which is just a little bit further over from the booth that we're on in the expo. What's the connection with you and the Career Pavilion?
Yeah, no, it's a great connection. So TechFest Live has four pillars to the programming. I mentioned a little bit about the annual expo.
Yeah.
We also have something called For the Youth, little play on words, F-O-R-E, like the game of golf.
Okay.
So with that, we're getting more students involved in golf by using the Smart Golf technology. So what it is, it's an AI-powered swing analyzer that teaches anyone how to use the game of golf virtually through an iOS or Android-based app. And so we actually take that technology into underrepresented communities, into school districts, and we get students more involved in the game of golf virtually right in the comfort of their home or classroom.
Great. What's been the reaction to everything so far?
I mean, besides the remote, I think we have the best booth here at South by Southwest.
It's very good of you to say. Listen, TechFest is growing year on year. I know you were telling me how much things are developing. Just for the benefit of our listeners and viewers, where did you start? Where are you at now?
Yeah, so probably like a lot of people, I started this organization right at the cusp of the global pandemic, right? So the first 2 years we did this, we had to do it virtually.
Okay.
2022, we hosted our first in-person event after everything was over, and we had 400 students be a part of that. Last year, I hosted my second in-person event. We had 1,100 students. And then this year, we're gearing up for our third in-person expo at the University of Houston Tech Bridge down in Houston, and we'll have about 2,500 students be a part of that expo. So the numbers do kind of speak for themselves. We're growing, but we're looking forward to the future and what that looks like for TechFest Live.
What businesses have you got lined up for this year that are coming?
Yeah, great question. So we are bringing back a lot of the returning organizations and partnerships from, Microsoft, Comcast, JP Morgan was a part last year. But we're also looking to bring in more partnerships with Meta, with your Exxon, Chevron Technology Ventures. But we're really not married to any company. We want all companies to come to TechFest Live and showcase, what does it mean to work for your company? What are you all doing in technology? How are you driving, how are you driving innovation? And how can we get more students to want to work and adopt your brand?
Had you ever worked in events before? I mean, this is a big undertaking.
Yeah. I did. I'm still learning, but I did. So I actually went to school at Texas State right down the street here from Austin in San Marcos. And so I hosted an event called the Weekend of Welcome Festival.
Okay.
What that was is I was trying to get the university and the San Marcos community more in cohesiveness and collaboration. So we brought in local businesses. We brought in the student organizations at Texas State to really host a community event. And so that kind of sparked my interest in, well, let me use a little bit of my major, let me use a little bit of my love for hosting events. I merged the two, and shortly after graduating, I started TechFest Live, and so I'm here today with you.
Amazing. And so what's the dream? I mean, we're here at one of the biggest events, going. Is this your ambition? I mean, how far do you think you can take this?
Definitely my ambition, and how far I think and I know that we'll take it is on a global stage. So
right.
I built this business in Houston, but we want to come to Austin. We want to go to Dallas and eventually go state to state and country to country. I see TechFest Live as a global organization, being able to take technology education and innovation worldwide to all the students that need it.
Well, I think what you're doing is absolutely fantastic, and it's why I wanted to get you on the podcast after we chatted yesterday. But for now, Khalil Vinson, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
So I'm now joined by Pat Wadders, the Chief People Officer of UKG. Pat, thank you so much for joining us. Should we start with a quick intro to your company?
Sure. UKG is a company that was created through a merger of Ultimate Software and Kronos. And we focus on workforce management, payroll, human capital management software. So think about the technology that serves people every day. That's what we do.
Great. So you're going to be speaking on a panel called So You Want to Be a Great Place to Work. What kind of leaders are needed to create a great place to work?
For all leaders. And what does that mean? It means that I'm a leader for everyone in my organization, not just my direct reports. So if I am accountable to the employee experience from top to tail, what would I do to manifest a healthy, engaged workforce? That's the foundation for a great place to work. Caring, listening, compassion for all.
What does the talent acquisition process look like at UKG? And how do you, because it's a question that we've been asking everyone here in terms of how you find that best talent.
Well, you start with your employee value proposition. What do you promise? What's the give and the get for any organization? So we worked on that this past 12, 18 months for the company to find what makes a great experience for you? And at UKG, for us, we want you to have the best leader in your career. I think leaders have this outstanding impact, and it's a privilege to lead. And so if you have a great leader, you get to be empowered and you get developed and you feel really good about yourself and truth, respect and care and all that. So recruiting starts with, what is that value prop? Mm. Will you pay me fairly, treat me with respect? Will I have the best manager of my life? Will I get promoted? Those things. And once you do that, you open up your aperture for candidates, and people understand what it means to work within your virtual hallways, you know, physical hallways, and they can do their best work. And so that, it starts with that.
Yeah. Is there, you mentioned physical and virtual hallways. I mean, how has the challenge been as we've moved to this kind of hybrid and remote working as well?
I don't think there's one size that fits all, no. And that's super irritating to people. They want to know, what's my template, what's the expectation. I think most are going to somewhat of a hybrid approach, 3 days in, 2 days out, two in, whatever that balance looks like. But what I do know is that when we do come together as human beings, the connection is stronger. The smiles are contagious. You read 90% of our language through our bodies. And coming together has some magic. Do you have to come together every day? No. So we're trying to figure that out.
Yeah. And so once you've managed to bring on board that talent, how do you then ensure that you create that positive employee experience for them?
Well, you think about that ramp up, right? You start a new gig and you have this anxiety like, I don't have any friends here. I don't know what to do, or what I did in my past may not apply here. And so it's all about that ramp up. How do you support them with care, with a buddy perhaps? What's your 30, 60, 90, 120-day plan? How do you get connected to employee resource groups, to clubs? I like to do sports and there's a softball team. Whatever that is to connect me both personally and professionally, it's super important. And having managers that check in with me. I want to know, do I have the right tools? Who should I be talking to? You're my advocate, my guide for that ramp up, and it's super important we stay connected.
Now, as well as being probably quite a busy chief people officer, I understand you have also written a book called Unlock Your Leadership Story. So what? Tell us about that. What was the motivation behind writing that?
It happened by happen chance. I had Wiley Publishing reach out to me last fall and said, would you write a book? And I'm like, no, not about HR, not about a company. I've been to amazing companies, and I don't think anyone really wants to hear about LinkedIn or UKG or ServiceNow. And they said, if you were to write a book, what would you write about? And I pondered, and I said, I would want to share my wisdom of the last 30, 40 years of leading myself and others with grace and humility and my mistakes and enjoying the journey and becoming authentically me and laughing along the way. And if I can give you those tips and tricks to navigate your career, your life, your personal scorecard to fulfill your legacy, I think that's pretty cool. So that's what the book's about.
How long has it taken to write?
I'm almost done. It is due mid-April, so wish me luck. I have one more chapter to go, and then I am done, and it launches in October. So I'm super scared, but it was the most fulfilling process, because when you write about your experiences, when you write about the wisdom you've learned from others and the help they gave you, it just kind of flows. It's a good reflection moment. I enjoyed it way more than I thought I would.
Pre-orders out yet?
In a few weeks, they will be.
Okay, there's the plug for you. Listen, Pat Waters, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This was fun.
I'm here with Melvin Wilson, who is the founder of Solve Innovation Group. Melvin, lovely to see you here at South by Southwest.
Great to see you too.
Yeah. Now, you spoke on a panel that I've actually listened back to, because you can do on the South By website. It was called The Great E-Migration. It was a fascinating talk. Really enjoyed it. Tell me, how is remote working enabling businesses to find the best tech talent, no matter where they are?
Well, the good thing is that a lot of the tech talent is making themselves available in ways that you couldn't interact with them before. So before Zoom, it was kind of hard to interact for creative industries in particular with talent that was remote. It's not as hard anymore. I would also say that same talent, a lot of them are doing education in the U.S. and going back to country of origin.
Yep.
So you're dealing with folks who are actually used to dealing with companies in the U.S., and it just makes for a really good culture mix as you're putting together teams in that region.
Yeah. Now, the session was focused around Latin America, wasn't it? Why specifically that region?
There's this view as if it's a new thing, interacting with Latin America. I've been doing it since the late 2000s.
Okay.
So it's not really new to me or a lot of the industries that are here. I think it's new to other industries because of things like the pandemic.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of benefits out of doing that. Mm-hmm. Time zone in particular.
Yep.
For some of the streaming and content industries, it's a good way to test content mm-hmm. in ways that would be very similar to lifting them and pushing them in the U.S. as well. So that's why I think there's been more attention on it as mm-hmm. Netflix and all the other streaming companies become big.
But it was what I found interesting when you guys were talking about the benefits of this, it was the benefits of the individual because obviously they've got access to some of these U.S. companies, but it was also the benefits of the local communities as well. Tell me a bit more about that.
So you have a lot of cool things happen where you have communities build up around some of these companies and centers, whether it's a creative agency, you have them start to teach a community about some of the skills that they've learned, and you actually have them contract out to have folks work there. Mm-hmm. So instead of trying to bring people from abroad to work at their office down there, they actually can get local talent. And it's pretty similar to what happens in the U.S., but I think there's a cost efficiency gain you get while you're enriching the community that's just exponentially bigger than you would get in the States.
Yeah. Now, let's look at this from a larger scale. I know you're passionate about tech equity and diversity. What does it mean for those areas?
In a lot of things that I would just are new to U.S. culture are not new to cultures in LATAM. So for things that we've been importing for years, like sports, soccer, telenovelas, it's a lot of food. All of these things are native to folks who are in Latin America, and they can bring that knowledge to the work, especially if you're working with marketing companies.
Yeah.
And those are the groups that are growing the most in the States that people are trying to sell to. So there's actually a really dynamic one-to-one relationship between creative that's coming from those regions that is being built out up here, whether it comes in the form of hardcore content or it comes in the form of an ad. There are a lot of efficiencies to be gained there that just makes work move faster here in the States.
Okay. Now, what about company culture? How do you foster that? How do you create a good company culture, you know, across all these remote areas that your business might operate in?
I would say technically, if you can use perks like, hey, let's go work with the outsourced team in Buenos Aires for 3 days. Those are not bad benefits for folks from the States. I'll just say that works out really well. But I would also say there's also a shared culture that's already there, especially if you're working in certain regions. So if you're working with folks who are Angelenos in Los Angeles, it's actually not that hard to have them work with a group from Mexico City.
No.
They have a lot of things in common already. You don't have as much of a language barrier as you would when you're dealing with other regions as well, as much as people would want to believe it. It's actually almost none, truthfully, when it's compared to other regions. So it allows you to build culture easier.
Yeah. And just finish up by telling me about Solve Innovation Group, so, and the work that you're doing at the moment and what you're excited about maybe coming up.
Yeah, I mean, for Solve, a lot of the work we do is bringing value to where tech people and money meet. In a lot of cases, that's startups. But in a lot of other cases, it's brands or it's big companies who are trying to find new areas to play in.
Okay.
And it ranges from all kinds of things. So it could be healthcare 1 week for my guys. The next week, it might be sports betting. The next week, it might be driverless car.
Wow.
But all of this stuff ties together because the infrastructure that you build from a code and a people standpoint is almost always the same. So we help companies do that with maintaining value to customers and not losing a whole bunch of money.
Yeah. Sounds like you're doing it very well.
We try.
Yeah. Well, Melvin Wilson, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
All right. Thank you.
I'm here with Cam Lawrence, who is the CEO of NewLab. Cam, nice to see you here at South by Southwest.
Thank you. Likewise. And thanks so much for having me.
Not at all. So start by giving us an introduction to NewLab and maybe what you're trying to achieve.
No, absolutely. So at NewLab, we're a venture platform that helps support early stage deep tech and climate tech founders. And we do that by creating the communities that they call home, helping them develop their products within our workshops. We also give them access to commercial partners, to largest industry partners in the world, where we run pilots to demonstrate commercialization of their product. And then we provide them access to capital. So our thesis is, if we can help with all those key components of the early founder journey, then we'll amplify the outcomes of the startups themselves and ultimately help address climate change on a global scale.
Yeah, wow, there's some really exciting, I imagine there's some really exciting brands that you're working with amongst those companies, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of one of the differentiators for us as an ecosystem community builder, is we're bringing some of the largest industry partners to the table. We've worked with Verizon in the past. We have Mercado Libre down in South America. We partner with New York's Department of Transportation locally for us in New York. So, you know, when we're bringing those type of caliber of organizations to the table, that's a unique opportunity for the startups to demonstrate commercialization and scale. So a key differentiator for us in our attempt to help startups at a really significant level.
Sure. Now, this is a bit of a whistle-stop tour for you, isn't it, at South by Southwest?
Absolutely.
But you are speaking on the Frontiers of Innovation panel, is that right?
That's right.
That all about? Tell me more.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting part about the NewLab story is, you know, people have come to our spaces in Brooklyn and Detroit, and, you know, we see these amazing spaces. We were talking about 70,000 square feet of space in Brooklyn, where there's 200 member startups that are building their vision. And in Detroit now, we opened that in April of last year, and now there's over 90 startups in Detroit, so helping to recreate innovation center of excellence of mobility in the city of Detroit. So we often get this question of, like, how do we bring NewLab to our market? And that's basically what we're having the conversation around later today with the Frontiers of Tech. So that's really about the importance of communities as you're bringing these founders. It's a lonely journey for a startup, you know? So if we can bring a community of startups together, all helping them build their products and help realize their vision, that has an outsized impact on their success rates. And so we think it's critically important. So that's what we're going to be talking about later today.
Yeah, you mentioned some of your locations there. So you've got Detroit, Brooklyn, and also Montevideo down
That's
in Uruguay.
That's right, in Uruguay,
so
yes.
How do these three locations interact with each other? What kind of culture are you trying to foster?
Oh, absolutely. You know, so we really look at it from the perspective of the NewLab method. So what we're trying to do is bring founders together, create home, create ecosystem, give them an opportunity to develop their products real time and have access to commercial partners. So that's kind of the magic of what we try to do. But each of those regions from there has its own local charms to it. So Detroit obviously is very much focused on a legacy of history in the mobility space, and obviously the advent of the car, all of that history. So really what they're focused on is leveraging that existing infrastructure, those big corporate relationships, and creating the next generation of mobility excellence down there. In Uruguay, similar situation. We're able to partner with the government as well as some of the largest industry players in Latin America to run some pretty compelling pilots to demonstrate commercialization for some of our startups in that corner of the world. So it's been quite exciting. And then in Brooklyn, I mean, that's our first home, over 200 startups, and now, you know, we started about 6 years ago. We've seen almost $2 billion in exits, a couple billion in capital raised, and about $8.5 billion in valuation. So, you know, it's really focused on cities, yeah. Everything that city needs. So charging infrastructure, EV mobility space, everything from, now we're doing a trial with the Department of Transportation there around battery swapping, because battery fires has become a huge issue in the courier community. So a lot of interesting work. What we see is startups trying to solve every aspect of transitioning to a clean economy. So what we try to do is at scale, help them provide access to opportunity to demonstrate commercialization. So that's what we're trying to do.
Cool. And how do you bring all those people together in those three different locations? How do you, is it across Teams calls or is it?
Yeah. So I think the nice part about the nature of work is transitioned so much that, you know, I can live everywhere. Our leadership team can do the same. Tightly connected via technology. You know, the Zoom is our friend. But then obviously trying to get the core team together at the same place, same time, so to really solve the big business problems is obviously a big component of our success as well. But yeah.
Just finish up talking to me about the hiring process there as well across these different locations.
Yeah.
You're trying to solve these amazing problems with climate. Mm-hmm. How do you find the right people?
No, well, I will say that's kind of one of the luxuries of my business, to be honest with you. I would say the level of talent I'm able to get at NewLab because of
the importance of our mission has really opened up the door to top talent like I haven't seen in my professional career before. You know, for us, it's incredibly important to have a deep empathy in terms of the startup, the founder journey. It's extremely hard to do what our member companies are trying to do. So that's the one common bond that brings us all together. But from there, I mean, I'm blessed with amazing talent, hardworking people, brilliant people, and then you know. But again, when we see the successes of our member companies, that's what makes it all worthwhile. It's why we do what we do.
Yeah, sounds awesome. Look, enjoy the rest of your time at South by Southwest. Cam Lawrence, thanks so much for joining me.
It's been a pleasure
today.
Thanks so much. Enjoy your time here as well.
Carl Skoog, the CMO of Amuse, is joining me now. Carl, it's lovely to see you here at South by Southwest.
Thank you. Lovely to see you.
Just give me a brief introduction to Amuse, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so Amuse is a music company funding artists, providing music distribution for the independent community. Support the new generation of DIY and independent artists from bedroom to stardom, you could actually say.
Okay. So what is going wrong then with the current industry, in your opinion, in terms of how it's failing these independent artists?
It does, and it has done that for decades and decades. The music industry was a place for status quo, for the very few, for a few handful big corporate companies. And the movement we have seen has just started. And there is no place for artists to really express themselves in the past. And of course, the industry or the phenomenon of independence is pretty young. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge opportunity here to grasp.
Yeah. So what is that opportunity? What can be done to fix this issue?
To start, maybe the challenges is that some big corporate companies are dictating the ways to artists to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, people are not paying that much for music today.
Mm-hmm. If at all.
If at all, actually. Yeah. So that's also a challenge.
Yeah.
And to fix this, I think it's three parts. You need to start questioning old roles, old models, how things works. From funding to financing to marketing to PR to reach that dream of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to create powerful alternatives to that. Mm-hmm. So really evolving the artist, helping them in different way, in a flexible way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to be flexible in today's landscape.
Now, your roots are in Stockholm, aren't they? You're a Swedish company, but you've grown the brand internationally. How have you done this, and what future growth do you expect?
Yeah, we have done great. We have had a great success, but we're not done, and we're on a mission to help independent artists. But I think we have created a powerful alternative to all things out there, because it's a cluttered market, and the independent scene hasn't grown as fast as it do right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, of course, a huge opportunity for growth. But I think create that powerful alternative, be the flexible partner, be partner with the artist, I think it's super important. And be flexible. Mm-hmm. Flexible with listening into what they need. Do they need funding? Do they need marketing help? Do they need legal help?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of... To have a very solid distribution platform as the base.
Now, let's just finish up by talking about this new content series. Could you tell me a little bit about that? Because that's launching very soon, isn't it?
It's launching very soon. I won't call it a content series. I think that it started off as an influencer idea.
Okay.
Using our, of course, artists on our platform and our licensed artists to manifest their dreams. So the concept is called Dream Factory, because Amuse is kind of a dream factory.
Mm-hmm.
So we have sent out a very open brief to them, like, how did your career start? How did you evolve? When did it start? Your music interest, your growth. And then the other part of it is the story of making music. So with that super open brief, we have gained, and the artist has created super good content for us.
Cool.
So we're going to launch that next in a couple of days.
Yep.
We have a handful, I think we have 20 artists on board right now, but it will continue grow, and we will scale Dream Factory into a fund, into some other parts that I can't tell you right now, but
right.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And it's showing our brand from another perspective than just being a distribution platform or what we do. It's actually what comes out of using our services.
Okay. And it's in partnership with the Face magazine as well, isn't it? How does that work?
Yeah, we're partnering up with Face, a great magazine, great presence, footprint, of course, and they will help up with some editorial pieces, and they're a great partner in this collab.
All right. Well, it sounds super exciting. We will definitely look out for that. Carl Skoog,
thank
you for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much again to all our guests who took the time to chat with us on Remote's booth here at South by Southwest.
Really hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please do follow us wherever you get your podcasts, and please do give us a positive rating and review. Plus, you can find us on all the usual social channels.
And if you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can do that via the contact form on the website at csuitepodcast.com. But for now, from me, Russell Goldsmith, and Graham Barrett, thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.